Oh Gott, Rotlin Shays, eine Advokatin hier bei uns, ist darunter gefallen. Splat.
Rotlin Shays ist was?
Gefallen.
Oh. Ja? Was hat sie gesagt? Ich habe sie nicht verstanden.
Sie sagt, eine Frau, die durchgefallen ist, und danach sagte sie, ja. Splat.
Ach, die Tür hat sich geöffnet, aber leider, aber kein Aufzug. Und verschwunden war sie. Splat.
This is The Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 379 for the week of November 1st, 2021. I am OSHA promotion seeker wet dream David T. Cole. And I'm here with burnt-out prosecutor Tara Ariana.
I don't have time to care about your case.
And Private Dick, who's a sex machine to all the chicks, Adam Grossworth.
I'm just talking about Shaft.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Sarah is still out. We hope to have her back next week. Let's talk about how this episode today came about. Today, we are going to talk about, spoiler, L.A. Law, Season 5, Episode 16, Good to the Last Drop. Now, you may say that seems like a very old TV show for our lead topic, and indeed it is. And the reason why this topic came into our hands is because we decided to let Patreon decide what our fall forcening topic was going to be. Our only stipulation had to have something to do with fall, so they ran with that semantically. It wasn't about autumn. It became about the physical act of falling. So if you know anything about this episode of LA Law, you know exactly where we are going. And if you don't, stick around because it's great. It's one of
down.
TV's
We're going down.
Greatest moments. So with that, let us get talking about our fall forcing. L.A. Law, Season 5, Episode 16. By the way, excellent title. Good to the last drop.
It's very good. So here to join us to talk about it is the co-host of the podcast, Muppeturgy. He's also, of course, the namesake of the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. It's Adam Grossworth!
Adam, welcome back.
Hello.
Yay!
Hello.
We're going to do a lot of this.
All right, let's do the Chen check-in up top because we are going to be spoiling the episode like crazy, like more so than we already did.
Sure.
Adam, should our listeners, if they can find it, we'll link this episode in the show notes, but should they watch Good to the Last Drop and I guess LA Law writ large?
If you have nostalgia for this episode, as I think we all do, then yes. Otherwise, I don't think it's worthwhile on its own, but I hope that the impending LA Law reboot means that LA Law winds up streaming because
I feel like it has to.
Right. I would like to watch from the beginning again, and then I would say, yes, watch the whole thing. But I think on its own, out of context, except for the moment we're going to talk about, no. But the moment we're going to talk about on its own, yes.
Well, we're going to talk about the whole episode. Dave, what are your thoughts, Chen check-in wise?
I'm going to say yes, because I feel like there is the moment, but then there is the reactions and the way that they talk about the moment after that is also weirdly delicious.
Yeah. Yes. But there's like four other plots also.
The other stuff I don't remember. It's really just about this one thing.
I'm going to say yes as well. Although, unfortunately, as Adam alluded, it is only streaming in an extremely low quality format. So it's not the ideal way to watch it now. So I'd say I agree with Adam. Wait for it to inevitably come to streaming, which I'm sure is imminent.
If you need to watch it for the first time, definitely not in this format. But if you're familiar with it and you just want to remind yourself of what people say, absolutely, because this might be the last real audio video on the internet, the copy that we had to watch. Like, it seriously might be like 160 by 160 blown up.
Yeah, the one we watched was like ripped for someone to watch on their Game Boy screen. Like, that's how shitty it was. So L.A. Law, which anchored NBC's Thursday Night lineup until its series finale in 1994 when ER took over its time slot, maybe you've heard of it, was a legal procedural co-created by ex-lawyer Stephen Bochco. Set at the firm of Mackenzie Brackman, each episode was a mix of one-off and continuing cases, plus a sprinkling of the attorneys' personal lives. And over its eight seasons, stars who cycled in and out include future psych star Corbin Burnson, that was for Mademoiselle Caroline, Blair Underwood, Jimmy Smits, Harry Hamlin, John Spencer, RIP, Sheila Kelly, A. Martinez, Debbie Mazar, Dan Florek, Ross and Rachel Obstacle Guys, Stephen Eckholt, Melrose Place's Courtney Thorne-Smith, Max Headroom's George Cook, Co. That was for you, Adam.
Hey.
And Pooh terrorist Daniel Benzali. And you better believe I will explain what I mean by that, because we are here to talk about one of his 7 episodes of L.A. Law.
Did I hear that correctly?
Pooh terrorist?
Pooh terrorist.
You did.
Okay, all right, good.
We'll come back to it.
All right,
so I'm Good interested. For the Last Drop is a pretty typical episode of L.A. Law. There's a funny case, a few deadly serious cases, and some chat about the firm's lawyers' relationships with each other. The one thing that isn't typical is that name partner Leland McKenzie is in the hall outside his office saying goodbye to his recent ex-girlfriend, the polarizing Rosalind Shays, then turns his back on her just in time for the elevator doors to open and for her to step in to the elevator shaft, because the elevator isn't actually there. Adam requested this clip, but we already had marked it. Here's exactly what happened. Let's hear that clip.
As most of you no doubt know, last night, a little after 10 o'clock, Rosalind Shays inadvertently stepped into an empty elevator shaft. It wasn't known exactly how far she fell, only that she didn't hit bottom. And the police, by lowering a camera, were able to determine that she'd been ensnared in some cable wires between the 7th and 8th floors. We saw no signs of life. Since this is the express elevator, there's limited access on the lower floors, and they've not yet retrieved the body. They expect to do so by noon. I will make the funeral arrangements and let you know. Jack Sollers is representing Rosalind's estate. He's already been in touch. Douglas, coordinate that. As for everyone else, the situation with the elevators is not resolved. Obviously, your attention before boarding is advised.
So I just want to point out again, and you said it up top, but just to remind you, this monologue is being delivered the day after this all happens. Like, he came to work the next day. Buddy, take a couple of days. Like, relax.
But it's also, like, it's so unnecessary.
It's
like,
so
as a viewer,
gnarly.
Like, she died.
Yes.
She fell down an elevator shaft and she died.
Yes.
We don't need any of that information.
No.
It wasn't an off-camera death. They're actually having a very banal conversation about the state of their relationship.
Yep.
And she says, all right, we'll see you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And he yells something.
He reacts very emotionally. He runs to call 911. And I did not remember. I remembered the fall.
Yeah.
I did not remember any of those details. It's so unnecessarily gruesome. And she's still there.
Yes, she's the body's still there.
What I would like to have happen in that scene we just heard, because they're in a office full of lawyers, somebody would have said, well, she didn't step into an empty elevator shaft. It's just that the, you know, whatever you call it, the actual elevator box wasn't on the right floor.
Yes, the car, I believe they're called.
The car, yes. The elevator car wasn't on the right floor. And then, but yeah, he's right. Technically, he's correct. Here's a promotion.
So let's start with Dave, because I think that you had less exposure to the show than Adam and I did. The reason Adam is here is that he posted on our Patreon poll that he watched this show as a preteen. I did also. Mm-hmm. So, Dave, what impression of the show did you get from this notorious episode?
I do remember the show. I don't think I was a regular viewer, but I think just because TV was the thing you watched and you made your peace with things that you didn't ideally want to watch, because L.A. Law wasn't set in the future, did not have lasers, featured no members of the A-team, as far as you know, et cetera, et cetera. But somehow you still watch shows because it's TV and that's what's on and you only have 3 choices. I remember watching this the first time at the time going, what the hell? That was really matter of fact, and kind of loving it for that reason. Because when you have a major character, obviously they either telegraph that this person is dying and they milk all the pathos and bathos and mathos and krasos out of the death, or like it's a minor character and they just sort of disappear and you just kind of never see them again. To actually have somebody just pull a boner and die, and that's it. There's no, like, last 10 seconds of their lives to say one last thing before the...
Yeah.
Just like, she fell down an elevator shaft, the end, never seen again, like, not even a funeral scene, as far as I know.
No, there was this funeral scene at the end.
Did they show her?
Yes, they show her in the coffin. He puts a rose on her.
Okay, that was because I was watching it in 160 by 160. I forgot. Apologies. Okay, so they do actually do that part of it. But just sort of the writing room balls to say, well, this character is going to no longer be on the show. how are we going to give this character the send-off that either we think she deserves or the audience wants? Or I don't know what the math was there, but somebody said, what if, now hear me out, what if she's just taking the elevator car's not there, and she just falls, and that's it? Do it!
Yeah.
Like, it's great! Looking back on it now, we all know what happened, and it's sort of the stuff of television legend, right? Mm-hmm. Just put your mind in that first view where you didn't know what was coming, and somebody just major character just falls down the elevator shaft like it's a fucking Merry Melodies cartoon. But they don't come back out like Daffy Duck. Just
right.
Dead. Just dead. I thought it was great at the time.
Yes.
And rewatching it, I really enjoyed it. I was surprised how early in the episode it happens.
That's the thing. It's the middle of the episode.
It's not the conclusion of it. It's not what everything's driving to. Like, I don't know what the promotions were. That's one thing I kind of wish we had were the on next on LA Law, like NBC Thursday Night lineup or whatever it was. Like, see the commercials for this episode if they hint at it at all, or whether they were really like, let's blindside everybody. I hope that's the case, because that would be the most effective way. Mm-hmm. So in the first act, she's gone. And then in the rest of the episode, there's all these weird moments relating news of that. Now, we heard that one in the clip, and at the intro, we've heard Amanda Donahue's speech to visiting Germans.
Yep.
About this splat, splat, splat being mentioned three times. It is so weirdly phased from reality, yet still feels kind of possible because of, like, just when you're stunned by a death like that and you are in an environment where you're not necessarily everybody's friends with everybody else.
Right.
It's a very sort of competitive arena. I kind of buy it that might be the way it goes.
Yeah, it was a bonkers show, kind of ahead of its time. It really anticipated our current bonkers era. Adam, what are your thoughts about the placement of the death and the death itself?
David E. Kelly wrote this episode, didn't he?
Yes, it was written by David E. Kelly, Patricia Green, and Alan Brennert.
So, you know, this would become like a David E. Kelly hallmark on his own shows, this kind of bonkosity. Yeah. But like,
well, and also on NYPD Blue and the next Stephen Bochco show, which may have been on at this time. I forget. No, that was later. But it was also a show that would, like, push the envelope in terms of, like, we're going to show butts, we're going to have swears. Right.
So, like, you know, like Dave said, like, this was a time, I guess, by the time this episode aired, 90210 had started, but, like, the idea of a teen show didn't really exist. There were kid shows, there were adult shows. There wasn't really anything in between. So LA Law started when I was around 11, and I watched it, right? I think it's just like the sitcoms ended, and you watch this, and I was super into it. I think most of my friends watched it. Like, it was a show that I didn't just watch because it was there. I actually really liked it, and I was pretty into it, and it was probably the first, like, 10 o'clock primetime drama that I really watched and got into. And by the time this episode aired, I was 15 and a half. So, like, arguably too young for it, but whatever.
Yeah.
And the only specifics I remember are the Bull Semen episode.
Yep.
Which I think is pretty early, and probably also David E. Kelly, and this. But it turned out I remembered nothing about this episode except for the specific moment of her falling down the elevator. And I do remember it being completely shocking.
Yeah.
Because even though, like, they break up, like, there's no buildup. She's not leaving. Like, there's no sense that she's going anywhere. And the way it's shot, like, they shoot her from the side, and she just, like, casually steps into the elevator. And then they cut to a different angle, in my opinion, a little bit too early, because then it looks kind of silly. But honestly, like, I don't know how I step into an elevator. I don't think about it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, maybe that's what it would look like. I have no idea. Her arm kind of goes up. It's very weird. I definitely rewound it, even in the terrible low-res version that we had, to watch it like three or four times, because it's funny, but it's also kind of horrifying. As a person who gets on an elevator multiple times a day, every day, even in quarantine, like, I live in an apartment building, like, if I have to go to the grocery store, like,
it's a very 1970s sort of era fear, you know, like, for me, falling down the elevator shafts is, like, right in there with being buried alive in quicksand, of things that the 70s really wanted you to start thinking about and be scared
for
about.
Sure. Yeah. But, like, in my office building, every once in a while, like, one of the elevators is just, like, out of service in the lobby, and, like, the door is open and the lights are off. Like, the car is there. Like, there's no danger. But when I walk by and, like, the door is open and it's dark, my first thought is Rosalind Chase, like, 30 years later, and I remember her name, and it's my instant association to an out-of-order elevator. Like, that, it made an impact. It made a splat.
Yeah. made it splat. First, I want to correct myself. I referred to Stephen Bochco as a former lawyer. I mixed him up with David E. Kelly. That was his journey. Stephen Bochco was just always a TV writer, going all the way back to the original Ironsides. Yeah, I mean, this is like, it's one of those indelible TV moments. Like, it's just, it has turned into a punchline in our time. But like, in the context of the episode, it really works. And maybe just because of how gruesome it was. But it also made me wonder, like, is this when they decided to write her out, or she was leaving, or whatever, the actress, was she like, just go full tilt cuckoo with my departure? Or were they like, was that monologue that we heard because they hated her? Like, you have to wonder. It's so visceral. Like
the character was so hated by everyone on the show. It's hard to tell. And I feel like her character on Star Trek was also kind of hated.
Yeah, definitely. Everybody was wanted Crusher back. Crusher is not a great character either, which tells you something about how much they hated Pulaski. But Rosalind falling down the elevator shaft to her death in season 6, probably the most iconic and famous moment of the show, was actually inspired by a similar bit on the Bob Newhart show back in 76, where we see Dr. Hartley step into the open elevator shaft in his building, not realizing the elevator's out of service and clinging to elevator poles as the doors close. Hmm. They shot Rosalind elevator scene from below and behind the actor.
Yes.
So that you could not see it was a stunt woman and not her falling down, which makes sense.
Sure, of course.
In a recent MeTV Legends interview, David E. Kelly said that he killed off Rosalind Shays because he was leaving the show and he loved the character so much that he didn't want to see her mishandled in the hands of another writer. If I can't have you, no one will.
Wow.
If that's true, that's a really shitty thing to do to an actor and her paycheck. Like, that's a horrible thing to do.
And it screws him too, because from listening to the commentaries on Simpsons DVDs, I know that if you create a character, you get royalties every time that character appears in an episode, whether you wrote it or not.
Do you really?
Yeah. Well, are we excited for the reboot now?
Not really.
Are they? They're bringing people back, right?
I think Corbin Burnson and Blair Underwood, and that's maybe all I've heard.
There'll be a couple. It's going to be like CSI Vegas. Yeah. You won't care.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to be like, here's two people you recognize. Otherwise, it's just like another lawyer show in the present day, and they will try to goose up all the new people.
And we have the good fight, so we don't need it.
Time to go around the dial first up.
Highbrow, lowbrow. First, my highbrow. We Insecure. We are two episodes into the fifth and tragically final season of HBO's Insecure. Season 4 was largely about Issa and her best friend Molly kind of coming apart as friends, which involved them ignoring the problem, then ignoring each other, then kind of trying to deal with it before one or both of them was really ready to work on things. And it was tough to watch because their long and lived-in friendship and the shorthand that they have with each other has brought us so many of the show's best and funniest moments. But as much as I was heartbroken for the characters, I admired the ambition of the show picking apart this central relationship and portraying how these very real issues can painfully play out. But I'm also glad the final season has gotten them back together in a hilarious and real-seeming incident, which I won't spoil from the premiere. We also get a time jump to Issa and Molly, each working on what has been their biggest personal issue. Issa making a success of her event planning business and Molly taking time off from dating while she gets to know herself better. And then getting back on an app to try again now that she's maybe less prescriptive about what she wants in a partner. There was a montage in the second episode of all of the reasons that she broke up with past boyfriends over the course of the series that confirms her own self-assessment that she really was doing the most. But it's such a great, true, funny show. I feel like it's the kind of thing that could have kept growing with the characters for a million more seasons, which I would have watched. But I know Issa Rae also has a burgeoning career as a film actor and producer, so I can understand why she might be ready to hang up the character. But I would love it if we periodically got an HBO Max movie checking in with them. Plus, also Kelly, who I love, Natasha Rothwell, because I'm not ready to say goodbye forever. But it's back. Get into it. Episodes dropping every Sunday. And I also watched Queens. What if Girls 5 Eva, but a drama? That's Queens. New this season on ABC. And by the way, Adam, it's called Queens because they are Queens, but they're also from Queens. So FYI.
Ooh.
Back in 1999, a rap group called Nasty Bitches, made up of Professor Sex, Jill DeThrill, Butter Pecan, and Explicit Lyrics, that's a person, had a huge hit with a song called Nasty Girl. Then a couple of them had a huge fight that broke up the band. And when we catch up with them in the present day, Professor Sex is now Brianna, played by Eve. She's married to a college professor and they have five kids. So I guess she was Professor Sex. Jill the Thrill, Naturi Naughton, is a devout Catholic in Montana, avoiding procreative sex with her husband because she's also in a relationship with a woman. And I don't think the show totally gets how Catholicism works. I think they made her a Catholic so that they could have scenes of her in confession. But everything else about her seems very evangelical. She says, like, she's a deacon's daughter and stuff. So unclear how she got from, you know, regular Christian to Catholic, but whatever. Butter Pecan slash Valeria, Nadine Velasquez, has had a career hawking her own signature cologne and acting on General Hospital, but is now a co-host on a The View-type daytime show called The Shade. She doses her white co-host coffee, causing her to say some racist shit on air and promote herself to more prominence on the show. And Explicit Lyrics, real name Naomi, played by Brandy, has moved to Nashville and is trying to make it as a folk singer while avoiding spending time with her semi-estranged daughter, JoJo. And then, almost exactly like Girls 5 Eva also, a hot new hip-hop artist, this one named Lil Muffin, played by Pepe Sangua, samples one of their old songs and they're newly relevant again and invited to perform with Lil Muffin at the BET Awards, but they haven't really worked out their issues, old or new, so will it work out? Spoiler, yes. The show is not great. There are some real howlers in the dialogue. Jill seems to pop back and forth from Billings, Montana to LA on a second's notice, but it's the kind of extreme soapy nonsense that is perfect for a Friday night wind down now that Dynasty's done for the season. It airs on Tuesdays, but just save it. And they're also doing some interesting stuff with the Nasty Bitches relationship with Lil Muffin as they try to get between her and this shitty music business men who don't care about her as a person or her long-term well-being, which I wasn't expecting, but is very smart. And the Nasty Girls song, which we hear a lot across the first two episodes, is kind of great. The show is fun. You should give it a shot. Adam, you might like it, not just because of the Queen's connection.
All right.
And for my plug, because Sarah was out, we had guest co-hosts on the latest Again With This, our show about Melrose Place. So we will link in the show notes to the season 4, episode 19, featuring Heather Cox and Jessica Morgan of Go Fuck Yourself, which was super fun. And they will be back next time as well for episode 20, the double episode in which someone dies. Sadly, not Billy.
Sorry, Billy. Adam, what do you have?
Oh, no, I wonder who it could be. I'm going to follow Tara's lead and do two. They're both middle brow, I think. A few weeks ago, Tara mentioned The Big Leap. Have you caught up at all yet?
I have not, because I was watching Queens last night. So, no, I'm still behind.
I caught up over the weekend, and I'm not sure if it's getting better or I just have Stockholm Syndrome. I think what I didn't quite realize on the first two episodes that I have now clued into is that it's a comedy. I think maybe they weren't sure either. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely, like, it's not good. I don't want to suggest that it's good. But, like, they're definitely doing, like, a satire of reality television. And I think I didn't quite get that at first. And I think the more self-aware they are and the more funny they are on purpose, the better it is.
Yeah.
And it's sort of gotten increasingly goofy. And they put the characters in very dumb situations, like a couple of the dance contestants help a kid in a high school with a promposal. Why are they in a high school? Why is that kid even talking to them? It doesn't matter. It's an excuse to have a ludicrous dance sequence, and that's what we're here for. Everyone on it is really charming and is, like, very much just going for it.
It's a very good cast.
Yeah, Scott Foley especially is, like, leaning so far into, like, the kind of evil, unhinged reality show producer.
Yep.
If you like bad dance movies or, like, mediocre dance movies, then the show is for you. Like, if you're looking for, like, Unreal or So You Think You Can Dance, it's not at that level. But it's, they're having a good time, and I'm having a good time watching it. Slightly higher brow. I'm not a big rewatcher, but one of my pandemic projects, I did rewatch all of The Good Wife and The Good Fight, and newsflash, they're good. but they hold up. Like, some things have dated poorly, especially the politics and some of the non-actor cameos. But they're really good and they're really bingeable. Like, if you were scared off of the, like, CBS procedural of it all, I think they almost work better as a streaming show. because especially in the seasons that are not as good, because you can really like plow through them. Season six is not great because it gets really repetitive and you see that extra hard if you're watching it quickly. But like they're actually great about continuity, except for when Audra McDonald comes back and they just completely change her entire backstory and the fact that she went to law school with everybody on the show. But yeah, it's, I don't know, I really enjoyed it and it was really fun to revisit. My big takeaways were that Juliana Margulies is the best drunk on television, or the best drunk actor on television, I should say. Mm-hmm. And my biggest surprise is that I love Zach, a character who I fully hated the first time around. Huh. And I want The Good Fight to bring him back, to continue never saying Alicia Florrick's name, but to bring Zach back in some capacity. I just think it would be like a very fun little like twist to bring him back as like a tech guy or something.
Sure.
But yeah, they're on Paramount Plus. And if you didn't catch them the first time around, they're very fun.
Love it.
Plug.
Oh, yes. Right. I didn't used to have those, and now I do. For my plug, I have a podcast. It's called Muppeturgy, the Muppet Show Rewatch Podcast, because thanks, SEO. We are watching The Muppet Show on Disney Plus, episode by episode, and taking very nerdy, well-researched deep dives into the music and the guest stars and the pop culture of the 70s. If you're listening to this the week it drops, this Thursday evening, we'll have season 2, episode 6, which guests Nancy Walker. And we've recorded a few ahead. We're having a really good time. And you can watch along on Disney Plus with us or just listen. We talk about it a lot and we have lots of gifts in our show notes. So you can do either.
Woo!
Coming up on the next Extra, Extra Hot Great, the Extra Hot Great, so extra, we had to put one more extra in it, is Dave forces everyone, and by everyone, I mean Tara and Adam, who's with us today, to watch the 1972 TV movie / failed pilot endeavor, Baffled! Exclamation point.
And we are.
It earns it, yeah.
Starring Leonard Nimoy, yes, Leonard Nimoy as Tom Kovacs, a race car driver who discovers mid-race he is also psychic. Yep. So if you imagine race cars, but also the X-Files, including a trip to England and the occult, yep, plus some actual on-screen magic, you've got Baffled. Is it terrible? No, I kind of loved watching it. It's really bad, but it was a really good watch. You can watch it right now before the show. It is on YouTube. The link will be in the show notes. Leonard Nimoy, psychic car driver, trip to England, lots of stuff. Also features an elevator shaft scene, so you got that going
right
for you, too.
Yes.
That's true.
That is available to all our supporters at Extra Hot Great on Patreon, patreon.com/extrahotgreat. And then right here on EHG Prime next week, we've got HBO Max's Head of the Class sequel series, and we're going to welcome back Danny McEachern for that one. Don't miss it! It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. As Tara remarked to me as we were watching this week's canon entry, when we have our friends come on the show again and again, eventually they will do the big canon swing.
Yep.
Presenting this week is Adam Grossworth. What are you presenting this week, Adam?
Just one point of correction before he says, I believe I said they wild out.
They wild out. That is actually what you said.
I mean, I have previously submitted Smash and The Muppet Show, so I feel like I've wilded out before, but here we go. My first note is this might be a long shot. So here we go. But I've been thinking about this show a lot lately. For some reason, it's about a dystopian future run by evil capitalistic entertainment megacorporations. So who can say why? I am bringing you Max Headroom. I want to stay in the relative zone of LA law time-wise. Mm-hmm. For listeners who may not know, Max Headroom, the character, was created to host a music video show in the UK in 1985, which was later expanded into a talk show. A TV movie was made to provide a backstory for Max, and both shows aired in the US on Cinemax and were popular enough for Max to start doing ads for Coke, directed by Ridley Scott. I just learned that part researching this. And then ABC turned the British TV movie into a series. It's confusing, but it's kind of the most 80s thing that ever 80s'd. It was also insanely popular in a way that's kind of hard to understand, even having lived through it. The series never took off the way its character did, and it was expensive and had a staff of mostly inexperienced writers, including, I also learned today, George R.R. Martin, who would turn in scripts late, if at all, so it was canceled pretty quickly, and the whole phenomenon ended in the way these things do. But the show was a really big deal to 12 and 13-year-old me. I would tape it and leave the tape in the VCR so I could press record when the commercials came on, so I had them too. I loaned my tapes to someone, and then he changed schools, and I never got them back. So David Franklin, if you're listening, I can hold a grudge for a long time, and I still want those tapes back. It finally came out on DVD in 2010, and I will admit that I maybe still haven't watched all the episodes. But the pilot, despite being very piloty and very 1987, I think holds up pretty well. Sounds like you guys maybe don't. That's okay. And I think it's 20 minute into the future predictions are pretty accurate, give or take 10 minutes. So let's get into it. This is Max Headroom, Season 1, Episode 1, entitled Blipverts. Edison Carter is a reporter for the powerful and evil Network 23. While investigating a mysterious death, which we'll get into in a minute, he not so accidentally goes flying off a motorcycle headfirst into a maximum headroom sign, get it, and is almost but not quite killed. The evil network executive needs to know how much he saw and possibly transmitted back to the office, so the Doogie Howser-ish teen in charge of R&D uses some experimental tech he's working on to extract Edison's memories. Clip one, please, Dave.
Hi, Max.
Hi. Both of you. Welcome to Network 23. You want to check these ratings? I seem to have an audience of two.
This is fantastic.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Network 23. Live and direct, it's Network 23. The network where two's company and three's an audience.
Wait a minute, where does all this stuff come from, Bryce?
The components of Carter's mind. But he's adding to it. He's learning, Mr. Grossberg.
Max, of course, finds his way on the air and becomes extremely popular. Max Headroom, the show, is basically a procedural, and the story of the week that also sets all of this in motion is the network's use of blipverts, super high-speed commercials that have one teensy little side effect. Clip two.
Now, because I designed blipvertisements to compress a 30-second advertisement into 3 seconds, it seems that the brain violently stimulates all of these nerve endings simultaneously. In some viewers, this seems to cause a short circuit throughout the body. In some particularly slothful, perpetual viewers literally explode. Pretty simple, really.
Simple. It won't be so simple if news of this leaks out. My God.
Come on, Ben. The only people that inactive are pensioners, the sick, or the unemployed. I mean, who really cares?
Yikes, hey. That sounds evil. Surely the rest of the executives don't share his views. What? Oh, clip three.
Edwards, what exactly did the Zigzag Corporation say?
Their whole campaign is designed to use blipverts to prevent channel switching. Ordinary ads allow channel switching. Their view is that they could buy time on any network for that. No blipverts, no deal.
We can't reinstate blipverts. They're lethal. You know that.
That hasn't been proven.
If the Rebus tape isn't proof, what the hell do you need? A live demonstration?
Ben, I find that tasteless.
Nevertheless, blipverts are killing people.
Some.
Maybe.
Look, I've heard enough of that. We're talking business here. We're talking ratings.
Should be talking people.
The same thing.
The bad guys dump Edison in a body bank, where his producer rescues him in time to go live with the story and with Max's help and end the episode in victory, question mark. Here's why I think Blipverts is canon worthy. Number one, the cast. Matt Frewer plays Edison and Max, and if you only know him from things like the 90s miniseries of The Stand, or his guest spots on every sci-fi channel show that shoots in Vancouver, which is redundant, or Max himself, you might be surprised by how good he is as Edison. I feel like he got typecast as Max, and it's easy to see why. What I love about his performance is how he makes Edison and Max two very different characters, despite them coming from the same brain. Edison is grounded and real, and surprisingly sexy. Speaking of which, Amanda Pays. This episode fails the Bechdel test spectacularly, but Pays rises above the 80s trope of, look, a hot lady, and she's smart, by radiating charisma and chemistry in every scene she's in. I'd happily watch a spinoff about Theora. Maybe Pays and Amanda Donahoe from L.A. Law could do something together. Jeffrey Tambor is a creep, so let's not talk about him, but he's great here. Charles Rocket and George Coe play the most evil and the only good network execs, respectively, and what more could you want? Sassy Magazine One to Watch, Chris Young isn't the best actor, but he's giving exactly what's required for Bryce. He's insufferable in a lovable way, which is a hard line to walk. And the rest of the cast is a parade of, hey, it's that guys, including Jerry Burns, Lee Wilcoff, and Billy Bird. Yeah. Number two, it mostly holds up. The sequence where Edison breaks into and then escapes from Bryce's office reminded me of a lower budget Alias. The jokes mostly work. Where a lot of sci-fi tries to guess what the future will look like and gets it laughably wrong, Max Headroom is just sort of out there. Theora has a car in her bedroom for some reason. Yeah. Some choices that I suspect were made for budget reasons, like typewriter keyboards and the black void of the boardroom, come off as not exactly cool, but distinctive. They're very 80s, but avoid the trap of everyone sitting at Apple IIe's or attempts at accurate predictions that immediately look silly. Three, it was actually pretty prescient. This is a world where screens are everywhere and can't be turned off. They're CRTs, not smartphones, but close enough. Network 23 seems to be a cross between Fox News, Hulu, and YouTube. Blipfords are short, unskippable ads for a product that is never named from a corporation that would rather kill you than lose you as a customer. There's massive income inequality and a whole class of people trying to get by in the gig economy doing odd jobs. The medical system is an absolute nightmare where people are literally bought and sold for parts. Giant corporations clearly have the wealth and resources to solve these problems, but would rather see you explode than share their technology, or worse, lose your subscription. And four, Max himself. Max wasn't computer generated, he was just made to look that way with prosthetics, lighting, and editing. But he foreshadowed a world of CGI characters, artificial intelligence, and deepfakes. The weird road from advertising character to series would happen again with the Geico Cavemen, sure, but also Ted Lasso. And Max's whole shtick is that he's a talking head looking directly into the camera and saying whatever comes into his head. He's basically a TikTok influencer. I found an oral history from a few years ago where one of the writers said Max, quote, has all this information, but he doesn't have any knowledge, end quote. If that doesn't scream 2021, I don't know what does. And so I hope you'll catch the wave and induct Blipfurts into the canon.
I feel like we should start with the Starlog Jam's own David T. Cole.
All right. Well, just one minor correction. We do know the ad, the blipper is for Zigzag.
Yeah, so we don't know.
We don't know what the product is.
We don't know what Zigzag is, though.
It seems to be, but the promo seems to be for a Zigzag, like you would see an ad for some beleaguered corporation that is trying to polish their burnished reputation.
You think it's just an image ad as opposed to a product ad?
Yeah, it's like RJ Reynolds turning into whatever the new name is for this whole
Altria.
It's kind of, it strikes me as that kind of ad. So it kind of makes sense that you don't quite know what it's for. You know, like today you would have, you know, like couples holding hands in a park for 2 seconds, right, and then there'd be a picture of a dog, that kind of ad.
Fair enough.
I thoroughly enjoyed watching this episode of Max Headroom. It took me back to me also being very excited for Max Headroom because it had to do with computers and it kind of was like a video game. And it had computer animation and they used that computer animation to good effect. They used the limitations of the time to animate Max Headroom little pieces at a time, which were probably all the rendering power they really had, and then edited it together. So it was a smart use of like mid-80s technology. I love the overall look of it. The overall look is basically the 1984 Apple commercial done a little cheaper.
Or Brazil.
I understand why young me liked it a lot, and I did enjoy watching it. I don't really think it's canon worthy. There are a lot of elements that are trying, like the amount of time they spend on screen just going through what, admittedly, for the time, probably was a little nifty little security computer interface thing as they go up and down in the buildings and somehow access cameras by doing like a VR fly through like air ducts and toilets and urinals to get to the camera access point. It makes zero sense, but like somebody spent a lot of time programming that animation in. And the animation style for all this is very vector graphic. So if you imagine higher fidelity Asteroids or Tempest, if you've ever played those games in the arcade, Star Castle, those type of games, it's like that. But they spend so much time through this interface, like a good quarter of the viewing time, the action scenes at least, are this. And it gets a little trying, especially like in a 2001 sort of viewing capacity.
2021 is the year we're in now.
Yeah, 2021. Also 2001.
This also would have been 2001 too. Well,
sure.
Really enjoyed Matthew here as Max Headroom. He is good in kind of everything he is in. Like he's, a character actor that like kind of had one toe in leading roles a lot, you know, like he was always sort of like on the precipice of doing something more. And then I feel like his hairline just sort of wrote him out of contention for being that next level, right? Like he just really needed to invest in Rogaine and really embraced Toupet. And I probably would have had better roles for the next 10 years after this. But, you know, he was great in Star Trek. I really like him as an actor. The word Blitfert no longer has any meaning to me as a word. There is one scene where they're at the executive conference room and it is said at least 10 times in about a minute and a half, and I thought I was going insane. It was kind of like it did that cycle where it's like, oh, okay, stop saying it, please stop saying it. Oh, yeah, actually now I want you to all say it every 2 seconds because this is great writing. It's definitely worth watching. I enjoyed watching it. I don't want to watch any more Max Headroom because it is a poorly written show. But as like a time capsule, like it really is. Like there is no way you could make that today. You know what? Like when people make, here is my 80s video or here is my like 70s action cop show parody. And it always is like 70% of the way there, but it's always inauthentic. Like there's no way you can create this peak 80s product by mocking it or trying to copy it. Like it is pure 80s, and I really enjoyed that part of it. There are a lot of like juicy, lovely things to sink your teeth into, like the maniacal, super evil corporate head who doesn't care if people explode from blipverts. He's great. I loved him. Like there's a lot of things to love in this. It's just like not good, but it's enjoyable. It's like empty calories of a show. And I feel like if you engage it on that level, you'll get a lot more out of it than trying to like engage it as a good TV, G, capital T, capital V, TV.
All right. I'm glad I didn't waste your time.
Correcting myself yet again, Altria is what Philip Morris rebranded as, not RJ. Right. I agree about Matt Frewer as Edison. He is very good. And that bone structure plus that hairline, it's like, look out, Timothy Chalamet. Keep that hair or you are fucked. It was funny to think that in the, you know, 20 minutes into the future, that one of the TV networks would have an audience of 200 million viewers. Like, this is not the future that we got. Yeah. Really good ratings are like, I won't guess, but a lot lower than that. The great, terrible TV executive that Dave loves was played by Charles Rocket, who has also passed on. We lost him. But he isn't a King of Queens that I still intend to submit to the canon.
Oh,
so
boy.
Look out for that one.
One more thing that I forgot to mention in the sort of very 80s, which you can see the calculus of how much of the explosion they can show on TV.
Yeah.
And they don't show it until like the second really good look at the blipfert. And you get probably like a fifth of a second of somebody throwing clam chowder at the camera. And that's like the amount of explosion you get.
12-year-old me definitely like did the slow-mo on the on the VCR with that. And it's pretty chunky. They did a pretty good job. A little trivia, the second most evil executive in the boardroom is played by Lee Wilcoff, who was the original Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors off Broadway.
Hey, I knew that was a hey, it's that guy. Yeah. And also more trivia, Amanda Pays, who plays Theora, married Corbin Burnson of L.A. Law the year after this, and they are still married.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good for them.
But you want to hear something disturbing about her?
What?
She's very good looking, but oh, no. If you just box out her eyes, she's got Steve Buscemi eyes. Just saying.
She kind of does. You're right. I'm on her IMDb page. You're not wrong. I agree with Dave. This was fun, but it felt sluggish. Like I felt like if this was a half hour show as opposed to an hour show, it would have sped by a lot faster. Like there definitely seemed to be, well, we paid for this animation, so we can't cut any of it, even though it's, you know, it's slow and doesn't really tell you that much. Like, it's not that interesting. But I also take Adam's point about, like, how prescient it is about a lot of the things, you know, we are now seeing in media, not only how advertisements follow us around.
People perhaps blowing up watching TV.
Yes. Perhaps will cause us to explode one day. Who's to say? We don't know. But there's also a point where we see in the nerd's, in Bryce's room, he's got like a camera in it, in a remote control helicopter. So I assume there was going to be a drone in a future episode too. That's like, that also anticipates stuff that's...
We didn't mention he has a toilet computer.
He does have a toilet computer.
I found that very upsetting, actually. Like, he just like sits on it.
He killed a person on the toilet.
He did. He did.
It's the dream.
Anyway, I agree with Dave.
Talk about your poo assassin.
I believe I said poo terrorist. This is like, I can tell why it was a big deal at the time, but I can also tell why it got canceled. Yep. So it was fun to watch, but I agree with Dave. It didn't make me want to watch more the way that L.A. Law was like, oh man, what a good show.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. Thank you for bringing it to us, though.
You're welcome. And I will confess, I've had those DVDs for 10 years and not gotten to season 2. So, reasonable.
All right. Sounds like that means that Max Headroom, the pilot, season 1, episode 1, Blipferts, you are hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Drink Can.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for the winner and the loser of the week. Tara, who is this week's sexy winner?
Well, speaking of Steve Buscemi, he went out in New York this Halloween dressed as his own 30 Rock meme in a Music Band t-shirt, carrying a skateboard with a backwards baseball cap and a hoodie. How do you do, fellow teens? It is Steve Buscemi. Love it. Hilarious. Love a man with a sense of humor about himself, and that is one of Twitter's most ageless memes for a reason.
Now, I wonder if he also did that because it has sort of that, like, huh? Like, camouflage where you're like, well, that can't be actually Steve Buscemi doing right. Steve Buscemi. Somebody just really looks like Steve Buscemi. Kind of like when Bryan Cranston went to Comic-Con with a Walter White realistic
right,
mask,
right.
But it was just him underneath. I feel like it kind of gives him that sort of safe passage through Park Slope or wherever he was.
Right.
So I kind of admire that part of it, too.
Yes, he looks great.
Who is our loser of the week? Adam.
Well, speaking of Halloween and not speaking of senses of humor, Ted Lasso lost some cool points as Mitt Romney dressed up as the titular Ted for Halloween. Jason Sudeikis shadily liked a tweet by Alex Blaze, which said the scariest thing he, meaning Mitt Romney, could think of was kindness. Last Week Tonight roasted it. I realize the three of us are the last people in the world who have not watched Ted Lasso.
Yes.
But like, I'm all for politicians having fun and being relatable and whatever. And I don't even necessarily hate Mitt Romney all of the time, but like, these tweets were going around and I didn't get it because I didn't understand what he was doing.
Yeah.
And then there was one with Kristen Sinema.
Yeah.
Who I guess was also in costume, but I didn't know that because she's always in costume.
Well, she was wearing a nice dress like the female lead of the show, which I guess is how you could tell it was a costume.
Sure. And the tweet said, it was Mitt Romney's tweet that said like lunch with the boss or something. And I was like, that's a weird thing for you to say about Kristen Sinema.
Yeah.
So like, it just failed on every level.
Yeah.
It was not good.
Speaking about failing at every level, do you know what time it is?
You're welcome.
It's game time. All right, everybody. It is game time. We'll be doing a non-regulation game since Sarah is not here this week. Today, we're playing One Season Wonders from Meredith Santiago, who earns herself an extra credit topic. Now, the game today is simple. I'm going to give you some info about a TV show that only lasted one single season. You name the show. Since there's only two of you today and it's non-regulation, what I thought I would do is I'll read you all the possible info that is in this game.
Yep.
The year, the description, and what would have been the hint, one of the stars of the show, usually the star. You guessed for 2 points. If you miss, I'm going to go over to your opponent who can steal for 1 point.
Oh, shit.
Ooh,
so a little bit of a twist there.
May I suggest, even though we normally don't do equalizer challenge zones for non-regulation game times, we kind of have to do it when Adam's here.
Okay. Right. I can make that happen. I just have to find the cards in the moment. So that'll be a fun little thing that'll happen during the game. May I not get the steel mill information? Because why bother doing that this game,
right?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, let's throw it to Vicky to see who's going first.
We will start with Tara.
All right, we will start with Tara. We will continue with Adam, but remember to listen to all the information because you may be called on for the auto steal. 36 questions, two gross with equalizer challenge zones, I guess. Are we ready to play, or as Adam calls them, challenge zones.
Challenge zones.
Are we ready to play?
I actually call them me challenge zones.
Oh, okay, sorry. Me zones. Are we ready to play One Season Wonder?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Tara, here we go. Additional piece of information. I have arranged all these shows chronologically, oldest to newest. So
okay.
It'll also be a little bit of a hint for you. 1982. Two awkward teenage girls are desperate to fit in at high school, starring Sarah Jessica Parker. Name that show, Tara.
Square Pegs.
Square Pegs is good for 2 points. Adam, also from 1982, Sight Gags dominate this spoof of police dramas starring Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, I know it, but what's the show actually called? Police Squad?
Police Squad, exclamation
nice.
Point, good for 2. Back to Tara.
Yes.
1987 now. Follows Joe Gardner, a successful plastic manufacturer in Seattle, and his 4 adult children. Anne is a twice-divorced ex-hippie with 2 teenage children. Lindsay is a sales rep for her father's company and new mother. Jack is a drifter who's trying to find himself. And the youngest, Sam, is a preppy married to Kay, a free spirit. Starring Richard Kiley.
No idea.
No idea on that one. Adam, any idea there?
It sounded vaguely familiar, but no.
That is A Year in the Life. One season of A Year in the Life. All right, Adam, here's your actual question. We are now at 1990.
Ooh.
The musical Adventures of a Police Force starring Ann Bobby.
I have no idea. No, just kidding. Cop Rock.
Cop Rock,
Misty Sarah.
Of course. Tara.
Yeah.
1993. 7 students make their way through their freshman year at Havenhurst College, starring Jason Gedrick.
Class of 96.
Class of 96 is correct.
So near and dear to my heart.
Adam, 1994. Yes. A 15-year-old girl and her trials and tribulations of being a teenager and dealing with friends, guys, parents, and school, starring Claire Danes.
My So-Called Life.
Yes.
Also near and dear to my heart.
Also from 1994, Tara. This show is about the culture clashes that occurred between a traditional Korean mother and her fully Americanized daughter, starring Margaret Cho.
All-American Girl.
All-American Girl is correct. Adam, 1996. Yes. 2 American strangers meet and fall in love in Italy and return home, get to know each other's families, and take on new challenges in their lives, starring Kimberly Williams Paisley.
Nothing.
Tara, any idea?
Relativity?
Relativity is correct.
Wow.
That's good for 1 point steal. Tara.
Yep.
1999. A dark comedy about a sleazy Hollywood executive. His last movie bombed and he needs a hit. Will Beverly Hills Gun Club be it? And how far will he have to go to make it? Starring Jay Moore.
Action
is correct. 2001 now, Adam. A college freshman, his girlfriend, and their fellow dorm mates embark on one of the greatest experiences of their lives. Unfortunately for him, his recently divorced father is tagging along for the ride, starring Jay Baruchel.
Is that Undeclared?
It is Undeclared, correct? Char.
Yep.
2001. Lily McAllister has lived a charmed life as part of the most powerful family in the Southern California enclave.
Oh.
All that changes when a murder and cover-up in her own mansion thrusts her into a search to unlock her family's long-buried secrets, starring Dana Delaney.
Yeah, there were so many shows like this at that time. I'm just going to guess. Is this Titans?
No, it is named after a town or city.
Oh, okay, Adam.
What was the year?
2001.
Oh, Dana Delaney.
I know it now.
Southern California. I gave the additional hint. It is named after
a
city.
Town. Yeah.
Malibu Nights. I have no idea.
Incorrect. Tara, what do you think?
It's what audiences said. Pasadena.
Pasadena. Yeah, correct. No points, but that is the correct answer.
Pasadena Delaney.
Yay.
Boom. 2002 for Adam. In the future,
Long after Batman has driven himself into exile, his legacy lives on, starring Ashley Scott, 2002.
Oh, this thing. Birds of Prey?
Yeah.
Birds of Prey, yes. 2 points.
Sidebar, we got a very young Harley Quinn last night as when we were among trick-or-treaters and it bummed me out.
Yeah.
It was not appropriate.
Oh, no. Oh, that kind of... Oh, no.
Yeah.
2003, Tara.
Yep.
A university graduate working in the city morgue is able to repeat the same day over again to prevent murders or other disasters, starring Aliza Dushku.
Oh, the city morgue. True Calling!
Yes!
Oh, my God. From the depths of my stupid brain.
All right. This is for Adam. It will take us into our first score break. 2004. A 24-year-old loner lives in a trailer park and sells souvenirs in Niagara Falls. Animal figurines and dolls speak to her and force her to interact with people and try to help them. Starring Caroline DeVernas.
Wonderfalls.
Wonderfalls is the correct answer.
Polarizing show.
That
I
is.
I liked it. You guys did not, as I recall.
No. A little twee for my taste.
Yeah, it was definitely a twee. It was super.
All right. Scores, please.
Well, it could be closer, but it would be hard. Adam has 12 points. I have 11!
He left Sean's own.
Dave's finding the cards.
I know.
The cards have been located. So, Tara, you have your choice between ancient TV box, the 90s pop culture box, or the pop culture 2 box.
Pop culture 2.
Pop culture 2. I will read you 6 TV questions. 3 questions, 3 points. Sweep it, we'll double that to 6. Here are your TV questions. What Muppet-enhanced science fiction series was nearly named Far Horizon?
Farscape?
Farscape.
They're not Muppets. They're Jim Henson creatures.
Sorry.
TV, again, Tara? What ghoulish Chicago serial killer did Brian Dennehy play in the TV movie To Catch a Killer?
John Wayne Gacy.
2 for 2. What HBO series set after The Battle of Little Bighorn features the foul mouth of Al Swearengen?
Deadwood.
All right, there's 3.
You know, we don't need to do the Equalizer Challenge just because I'm here.
What
no
MTV
need.
Series aired an episode with the disclaimer, breathing paint thinner will damage your brain?
Beavis and Butthead?
Yes. 2 more for the sweep. Who posed in front of a gargantuan bowl of spaghetti to hype her reality show, Fat Actress?
Oh, Kirstie Alley.
All right, it comes down to this one. What show saw its popular deputy mayor, Mike Flaherty, replace mid-series by Charlie Crawford?
Spin City.
Spin City, that's a sweep. Tara, you just got 6 points. 6 points. What do you feel about that, Adam? How are you feeling about that?
I feel I've been equalized.
There's one more challenge zone coming.
There's one more coming. We'll see how that goes. Updated scores, please.
All right. Adam still has 12. I now have 17.
All right. Back to the game. So we are back to Tara. 2005. A bad boy chef runs wild in his New York eatery starring Bradley Cooper.
Kitchen Confidential.
Correct. 2005 again for Adam. Revolves around the lives of 4 close-knit 2005. Maybe I'll just leave that in. Revolves around the lives of 4 close-knit sisters of Italian descent, raised in Brooklyn, living in New York City, starring Jennifer Esposito.
Oh my God, I watched it. The hell was it called?
It's not Joey?
This is yours, Adam.
I know.
Oh, okay.
All I can think of is Joey. So I'm going to say Joey.
It's not Joey.
Joey lasted more than 1 season, believe it or not.
Did it?
Yeah.
And also took place in L.A., right?
It was set in L.A., yeah. Yeah. I think it was called Related.
Yes, it is called Related. 1 point. For Tara, question 17.
Spread Eagle.
2006. A 27-year-old is reunited with his childhood friends, starring Andrea Anders.
Oh, God. Is this... What About Brian?
Okay. Incorrect, Adam?
Yeah, I don't know.
That is The Class. The Class.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah, that thing. Now.
2007, yeah. Adam.
I watched that.
2007, a young Muslim student from Pakistan is sent to live with a Christian family in Wisconsin as part of a foreign exchange program starring Dan Bird.
Very good show.
Well, it's a bummer that I don't know it, because you clearly do. I have no idea.
Tara, Steele.
Aliens in America.
Oh, yes. Right, that thing. Right.
All right, didn't back to Tara for a question. 2007 again. A vampire lands work as a private investigator and falls for a mortal woman starring Alex O'Loughlin.
I want to say the guy, this is Hawaii. No, not Hawaii Five-O. This is the next show. Not Hawaii. Not that. I think this was called Moonlight.
Yes, it was called Moonlight.
Wow. Crazy. Nice pull.
All right, Adam.
Yeah.
2008. A Yale-educated journalism major reluctantly becomes a live-in tutor for the two spoiled granddaughters of a Palm Beach cosmetic business magnate starring Joanna Garcia Swisher.
I love the show, too.
White Wine Swisher. 2008.
You can really tell, like, where I stopped watching. I don't know.
No idea?
I know, yeah.
Privileged.
Privileged is correct. All right, this is your question, Tara. Also, yep. 2008. Mm-hmm. A present-day car accident mysteriously sends a detective back to the 1970s starring Jason O'Mara.
I know this one.
Oh, I thought it was the other one with a detective. This is Life on Mars.
Yes. Which one did you think it was?
I thought it was
Awake. Well, don't say it. Because
the Jason Isaacs show.
Oh, that's not in this game. So don't worry.
Okay. Because it could be.
It could.
2008 again for Adam. As America celebrates its 200th birthday, happy birthday, America, two generations of friends and neighbors in a Chicago suburb explore new freedoms and seek connections with each other in the midst of the socio-sexual revolution. Starring
Swing
Pauly
Town.
Martin. Yes, Swing Town. Correct.
Hell yeah.
All right, we're now in 2009, Tara.
Okay.
A special task force in the FBI investigates after every person on Earth simultaneously blacks out and awakens with a short vision of their future, starring Courtney B. Vance.
This could be any one of 7,000 shows
True.
Like this.
Yes.
There were two in the same season, at least.
Yeah, fuck.
The Lostinian era.
Yeah, is this flash forward?
It is flash forward. One word, flash forward. You have to say it really fast. Flash forward. Very well done, Tara. Adam, 2010 now. 2010. After 15 years in foster homes, a girl decides to get emancipated, which leads to her meeting her birth parents, starring Shuri Appleby.
Oh. What was the year?
2010.
I didn't watch it. I feel like I've heard about it. I'm not going to pull it. I don't know.
Tara.
Life Unexpected with a big X for no good reason.
That is weird.
Yeah, it's dumb.
2011, Tara.
Yep.
A 16-year-old girl moves to Washington to live with her grandmother after her mother mysteriously dies. She discovers she is a witch, along with five other teens, starring Britt Robertson.
Was this called The Secret Circle?
Yes.
Wow.
I don't know the show, but it smacks of CW, am I correct?
It was, yeah. Yeah. It was okay. It was like Dawson's Coven.
Yeah, and I think Britt Robertson was also in Life Unexpected.
She played the ex?
Yes. Future star of Under the Dome, Britt Robertson. Yes.
I think I made it through half an episode and I was like, even I can't watch this. This is bad. Yeah,
no, I didn't watch it.
Also from 2011 for Adam. Period drama about the pilots and flight attendants of The Most Glamorous Way to Fly, starring Christina Ricci.
Pan Am.
Hell
Pan
yeah.
Am is correct.
Oh, Tara. I might know what's next.
Yep.
2012. A Las Vegas showgirl marries a man on a whim and moves to a sleepy coastal town where she winds up working alongside her new mother-in-law at her dance school, starring Sutton Foster.
Well, I got Adam's question, so this is a mistake, but it's Bunheads.
It is
not
Bunheads.
What I thought was next. Didn't that get two seasons?
I think it was one, and there was
like
a big
split
long
up into
break.
Two, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
You were. I know what you were thinking. You were thinking of the Playboy Club.
I did. I was thinking, Pan Am with Pan Am. Yeah.
All the Mad Men alikes.
All right, Adam. Also 2012. At this NYC apartment complex, residents are granted one wish, any wish, but beware of the price. There is something evil about the Drake that only the owners know, starring Rachel Taylor.
Got to hate the Drake.
I'm just going to guess 666 Park Avenue.
Yeah.
Correct. What's that evil secret? We'll never know. All right. Tara.
Yep.
2013.
Okay.
A reformed party girl finds herself an Insta family after falling in love with a man with three manipulative children and two judgmental ex-wives, starring...
Maren Akerman.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know what it is?
Yep, it's Trophy Wife.
Okay, there you go. All right, this is
Madeline Akerman. I said Maren. I screwed up.
This will take us into our final Gross Earth Equalizer Challenge Zone slash Me Challenge Zone slash Me Zone. Mm-hmm. It is for Adam, 2014. After being the subject of an embarrassing viral video, a self-involved 20-something enlists the help of a marketing expert to revamp her image in the real world, starring Karen Gillan.
Yep. It's just Gillan.
Gillan. Oh. Without the I. There is no second I in Gillan.
I can picture the poster. I didn't watch it.
Sure can picture the poster.
Oh, extra hint.
Is it called Selfie?
Yes!
It is called Selfie, and it is time for the scores.
All right. Well, I have 35 points, and Adam has 20.
Okay.
Early aughts really killed me in this game.
You have your choice, ancient, 90s, or pop culture 2. And of course, as you recall, three questions, you get 8 points. Sweep it, we give you 15 points. Here
yes.
we go.
Well, I was leaning towards 90s, but I knew all of Tara's questions. So this will definitely bite me in the ass, but I'm going to go with the same box that she picked.
All right, pop culture 2 box for Adam. Here we go.
Come on.
What TV show passed The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet to become the longest-running comedy in television history?
Oh, cruel.
It's a gettable answer. It's a show you know. It's not like it was Gunsmoke or something. It's a comedy, long-running comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Long-running comedy.
It's still on the air.
Yes.
Oh, The Simpsons.
Woo!
What Scandinavian nation spawned the Survivor craze with a show called Expedition Robinson?
Is it Sweden?
Yes.
Woo!
Okay. What nutty nickname does enforcer Peter Paul Gualtieri answer to on The Sopranos? Nutty nickname.
Nutty nickname, Polly Walnuts.
Woo! So right. 8 points?
That's 8 points.
Okay.
If he gets the next three, he'll get an additional 7. The same you got.
Mm-hmm. This is very unnecessary, but
what
it's also non-regulation, so fuck it.
What government agency does John Cleese's character work for in Monty Python's classic Silly Walks sketch?
The Ministry of Silly Walks. That's a terrible question, but I'll take the easy win.
Oh, now I've now hit check marks, so I know we've gone through one half of this box.
Oh, damn.
Wow.
So now I'm going to switch over to the other side. What morning show felt compelled to commission the pop song Good Things Are Happening? Morning show. What morning show felt compelled to commission the pop song Good Things Are Happening?
Good Morning America?
Things are happening for Good Morning America. Correct. It all comes down to this, Adam. You get this. Mathematically, it just happened that the game will be tied.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. I swear to God, I just picked up this card. What two words did Jim Henson combine to create the term Muppet?
Fucking hell.
That's the question. Adam doesn't
actually
know.
Don't know the M part.
Doesn't know the question. The one fucking
Wait,
thing.
Wait, what did he say?
Okay, well, here's the question again.
He said
hang
puppet.
Hang on.
Okay.
What two words did Jim Henson combine to create the term Muppet? Give me the last part first.
With puppet, obviously.
Puppet. Okay.
Ma.
If that's a complete answer, you're incorrect. If you're just starting the answer, so far so good.
I have known this in my life, and it has left my brain completely.
No!
It's fully no stakes moment.
What's the Earl if they want to listen to the Muppet Show podcast again, Adam?
It's Muppeturgy.com. Yeah. It's not, it's not mop. It's
what if it
mop.
Is?
It's
I
not
thought this
though.
Was a slam dunk when I think
I know,
about it.
It should be. I have known this in my past, and I have fully forgotten it, and I feel shame. Deep, deep shame.
I can give you one hint.
Yeah.
The answer is on the same level as puppet. It is also a thing. Well,
yes.
As opposed to being moppy or something. It's not an adjective. It is a noun.
Right, right.
And it is also something that you use like a puppet.
Marionette. Marionette. It's marionette.
Yay!
Jesus Christ. So ashamed. So deeply ashamed.
All right, let's get the scores, please.
So sir. Few of them
Holy
are marionettes,
shit.
Though. It makes no sense. Wow.
We're all tied up. Holy 45 apiece.
Wow. All right.
That was a great round, Adam.
Wow.
Everybody
thanks, guys.
Has
it truly did equalize.
This is deeply
ridiculous. Questions left. The scores are now changing. And answer right off the bat, if it's your question, will net you 1,000 points.
I can't mark that in hash marks, Dave. That's
if it goes to the other person, it is now worth 500 points.
Okay.
Okay. Tara,
yeah.
We're back to you. 2015.
Mm-hmm.
A television lawyer moves back to his small hometown after a stint in Hollywood, thinking that his time on TV qualifies him to run his family's law firm, starring Rob Lowe.
The Grinder.
Is correct. Yes. Adam.
Yes.
2015 again. As she nears 40, a woman is about to embark on her second wedding, but her joy is tempered by the absence of her old best friend, who's a no-show, having dropped out of the relationship years ago, starring Laura Ramsey.
I have no idea.
I watched it and I can't remember what it's called.
It is called Hindsight.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yeah.
It was charming.
All right.
It was charming.
Yep.
2016.
Mm-hmm.
The members of a prominent Boston family suspect that one of their own is working for an infamous serial killer starring Juliet Rylance.
Oh, and Joan Allen. Fuck. I don't remember what it's called.
To Adam.
Nope.
For 500 points.
No idea.
That is American Gothic.
Right.
All right. Adam.
Yeah.
Also 2016. Hell-bent on bringing justice to those who get away with abuse on their college campus, two young women take on double lives as wannabe vigilantes, starring Liza Bennett.
What?
Now, you may think this has two answers, but it's actually
not. I don't think it has one answer. I've never heard of this.
Just saying, the answer's got a little, it's got a thing in it that makes
a
it seem like
in
it's,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Oh, I don't know.
Tara, for the steal.
Sweet Vicious.
Sweet Vicious is correct for 500 points. For 500 points. Tara, can I get the quick scores, please?
Sure. Adam has 35 points.
Uh-huh.
I have 1,535 points.
Okay, it's fair. It's fair.
Tara.
How it goes.
Yeah.
Everybody's last question. Mm-hmm. Here's yours. 2018.
Yeah.
Vince. Is forced to rethink his laid-back lifestyle following an unexpected visit, starring Anders Holm.
Champions.
Champions is correct for 1,000 points, extending your lead by 1,000. Adam, last question of the game, 2020, our most recent one-season wonder, already been canceled. After joining forces with a veteran, occupation redacted, because it is part of the title. 16-year-old fraternal twin sisters dive into the world of baddies while still navigating the high stakes of teenage life, starring Maddie Phillips.
I have no idea.
Teenage Bounty Hunter.
Teenage Bounty Hunters is good for another 500 points.
You're making
now,
things up.
It was
I
on Netflix.
I'm just going to put it out there that this might be the biggest disparity in scores we've ever seen in the history of game time. But let's make it official.
After failing him up a question, that's what I deserve.
Our final scores.
Adam finished strong with 35 points. I have, after a very sketchy final three questions, I have 3,035 points.
Well, you must have done really bad this game, Adam. What's going on? Such a difference in scores. All right, we have a tiebreaker.
Okay.
All right, first person to shout out the answer will get something. We'll find out what. Mm-hmm. It is from 2013.
Okay.
As soon as you think you know the answer, shout it out. If you shout it out and get it wrong, we're going to give the other person an opportunity to say another title before we come back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Ready, Tara?
Yes.
Ready, Adam?
Yes.
Redacted character travels to London with dark plans for revenge against those who ruined his life. However, his plan is complicated when he falls in love with a woman who seems to be a reincarnation of his dead wife.
Dracula!
Blah! Dracula! Correct! Tara, you got 10,000 extra points. It's too bad Adam didn't get that, because that question was actually still part of the game and was worth 10,000 points. So, Tara, can I please get the final scores?
Sure. Still 35 for Adam. Uh-huh. 13,035.
Wow. Amazing. All right, guys.
Well played.
Well done, Tara.
Tara!
Tara.
Me?
Well, Tara. Guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We fell for LA Law's elevator shaft shocker, good to the last drop, before going around the dial with stops at Insecure, Queens, The Big Leap, and The Good Fight Wife. Adam's cannon victory for Max Headroom was 404. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the decisive winner of this week's game from Meredith. Next up, baffled! Exclamation point on Extra Extra Hot Great. And on the next EHG Prime, it is head of the class. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David Teagle, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
dialing in from my toilet computer,
Adam Grossworth,
Splat,
and the absent Sarah D. Bunting, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Grey. Splat.
Come on, they're gonna throw us out of here.